Support for this podcast comes from the UTSA Institute of Texan Cultures, telling stories of Texas history and heritage from diverse cultures that define the state's unique character for over 50 years. Details at texancultures.utsa.edu.
Welcome to Fronteras, a program about issues along the U.S.-Mexico border and changing demographics in the Southwest. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. George Floyd's death has sparked a movement that many Americans have not seen in their lifetimes or expected to see in their lifetimes. Black Lives Matter started with a hashtag after the 2013 death of Trayvon Martin. It took on a new life with the deaths a year later of Eric Garner and Michael Brown. The movement dares us to look at the names and faces of the unarmed black men, women, and children killed at the hands of police, say their names, and acknowledge the institutional racism that's resulted in their deaths. Our guest on Fronteras today has seen life on both sides of the blue line. Ron Stallworth was born in Chicago in 1953. He grew up in El Paso, Texas, and later moved to Colorado Springs, Colorado, where he became the city's first African-American police detective. Stallworth infiltrated the Ku Klux Klan in 1979 and had his membership card signed by Grand Wizard David Duke. That story is told in the 2018 Spike Lee film Black Klansman. Stallworth has since retired from the force and makes his home in El Paso. Today's conversation with Stallworth was recorded on Zoom with Angela Cocherga, KTEP News Director in El Paso, and Alfredo Corchado, Mexico City Bureau Chief for the Dallas Morning News. Cocherga begins the conversation by asking Stallworth about the video that depicted George Floyd's last moments.
Since the video appeared, I mean, it's just been astounding for people to try and understand this. But a lot of people were not, unfortunately, surprised because of the cases in the past. What are your thoughts when you saw that video of Mr. Floyd and those officers in that moment?
Especially as someone who's been in law enforcement for a long time.
I was surprised. I was shocked. I couldn't believe what I was watching. What especially was upsetting to me was looking at Chauvin's face, Officer Chauvin's face, and the apparent lack of compassion, lack of empathy on his face, had a very cold demeanor, as if he was gutting a wild animal, as if he had been out hunting and was gutting a wild animal. There was just no emotion whatsoever. While Floyd was lying there calling out, "I can't breathe," calling for his mama and everything else he was saying. It was very disgusting, to say the least. And that's what was galling for me in terms of the officer who was standing around. He was just standing around looking at all this and whatnot and not saying anything to or doing anything, try to intervene and put a stop to it. He knew what was going on. He saw it. He was witnessing it. He's standing right there. He knew what was happening was wrong, and he could have put a stop to that and saved that man's life. But that's what was upsetting to me, was that this blue wall of silence was in effect at that point, and he was not willing to break it. And he allowed that crime, that murder, that lynching to take place.
As someone in law enforcement, that insight that the general public does not have, it was horrifying for everyone to see. And as you said, in that blue line, that silence was on public display. But as someone in law enforcement, it's incredible to even observe this, but you have a much deeper understanding.
You know, that's the problem with my old profession. We participate in incidents, we witness things like this, and we're afraid to stand up and be counted when we see wrongdoing occurring right in our midst. And because we're afraid to stand up and challenge our fellow officers when they do wrong, we basically keep silent and back them up, support them. The blue wall of silence, we erect it. And in erecting it, we become participants in their wrongdoing, unwitting participants. We know it's wrong, but we don't want to stand and be counted. And that's what's wrong in our profession, always has been. when all you have to do is take that first step and say, stop it. What you're doing is wrong. It's against the law. You're hurting this man. You're killing this man. Stop it. You have to stand up and be counted. Your voice has to matter. You have to be better than that. I hope police departments stand up and do revisions internally. And I hope the profession becomes cleaned up and better as a result of all this.
Well, you talked about them standing by and not doing anything. There were bystanders who were speaking out and really begging to intervene and help. And now we see people in the streets and this anger and outrage. I mean, these massive demonstrations, lots of young people, but people of all ages and all ethnicities and all races.
I love the fact that these protests are taking place. I don't like and I don't condone the violence that's taken place. Those are just a bunch of idiots trying to cash in on an opportunity. That makes no sense. What they're doing makes no sense. The protest itself, I'm happy for. One of the things I'm happy for is that they are making people stand up and take notice about the Black Lives Matter movement. This movement is one that is not anti-police. It's never been anti-police. It's one that is for making a difference. It's a modern civil rights movement led by young people. It's always been about improving community relations between primarily the Black community, but also the community at large. I think this is a turning point in the Black Lives Matter movement, the fact that this thing is literally gone global. I applaud the fact that these protests, for the most part, have remained peaceful, nonviolent. I think it's disgusting what Trump did the other night. I couldn't believe what I saw on TV. It's indicative of the fact that this country and the voting public experienced a major hiccup 4 years ago when they put him in office. And I think it's indicative of why we have to ensure that he's removed in hopefully 5 months. I think that's going to be one of the biggest outcomes of this whole affair is that it has galvanized people to the fact that they need to go vote. There's been a lot of clamor about whether Biden is the right man for the job to replace him. I think Trump basically put a nail in his coffin and galvanized young people to go out and vote. At least I'm certainly hoping that they recognize that.
Especially we see in a place like El Paso, the relationship, the Black-Brown relationship with young people and seeing this common goal and the common impact of some of these police tactics.
In terms of the ethnic makeup of this peaceful protest movement, I think that's one of the better things that has happened. You're seeing Black, you're seeing Brown, you're seeing White, Asian. You name it, the color of the rainbow is a remarkable thing for this movement. I mean, the civil rights movement, you had, it was predominantly Black, but you had your elements of white thrown in there that was involved in the civil rights movement in Dr. King's era. But what we're seeing right now is a new national movement that is taking over. And when you watch it on TV, it comes across very clearly. You see the white kids holding up signs saying Black Lives Matter. I understand your pain, that type of thing. And I think that's great. These kids are reaching out. They want to make a difference. They want to change America. They want to make it a better place. And we should all applaud that. And the fact that most of the people that have been the victims of police abuse of their constitutional authority, most of these victims have been Black. But we can't forget that there's also Hispanic victims that have suffered. So this is a nationwide problem. It has to be addressed.
Ron, what is your message to the nation's two main minority groups of Blacks and Latinos? I mean, what are the lessons from the past? How do you build coalitions today? How do you move forward? And I'm really interested, you know, coming from Ron Stallworth, the El Paso resident.
The lessons are we have to work together for the common good. My skin may be a little darker than yours and Angela's, but we have a common bond. We are human beings first. And as human beings, we need to work together for the common good. for the betterment of society and for the betterment of people in general. So we need to stop feuding and working against one another and start working with one another. The Chicano movement, the Latino movement, is in sync with the Black movement, always has been. When people raise their fists and say Black power, it's no different than when you raise your fists and say Brown power or Chicano power or whatever the current slogan of the day is. It's all united. It's all together. You just have to stop fighting and work for the common good. So I think they need to come together for that benefit and recognize that to those who try to separate and divide, they see one thing. They see you as a minority, period.
You're hearing a conversation with Ron Stallworth, a former police officer and detective. He's the author of the 2014 memoir, Black Klansmen, which was turned into a film in 2018 by Spike Lee. The conversation is hosted by Angela Cocherga, news director of KTEP in El Paso, and by journalist and author Alfredo Corchado. When we come back, the Black Lives Matter movement has embraced protesters of all ethnicities and all ages.
Whenever you get a mixture of the races, a rainbow coalition like what we're seeing right now, it always gives hope.
More with Ron Stallworth is next on Fronteras. Welcome back to Fronteras. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. There were hopes that when President Barack Obama was inaugurated in 2009, that the U.S. would enter a post-racial era. That turned out to be an illusion. America's original sin of slavery, racism, and white supremacy still reverberates. And George Floyd, Eric Garner, Atatiana Jefferson, Michael Brown, and the countless others whose names are lost to history. The events of August 3rd, 2019 were a shock not just to the city of El Paso, but to the world. 23 people were killed by a suspect who says he wanted to shoot Mexicans. America's original sin rose once again to the surface in a horrific display of violence. Recent Black Lives Matter demonstrations in El Paso featured the voices of Latino protesters. They were supporting the Black community, just like the Black community supported them after August 3rd. We're hearing today from former police officer Ron Stallworth. He was the first African-American police officer and detective on the Colorado Springs Police Force. He also infiltrated the KKK in 1979, a feat that was memorialized in the 2018 Spike Lee film Black Klansmen. Stallworth lives in El Paso, the city where he grew up. He reflects on the El Paso shootings and George Floyd's death in this conversation with journalists Angela Cocherga and Alfredo Corchado.
One of the things we've heard in the last few nights in El Paso, it goes back to August the 3rd. What we're seeing is civil unrest in the United States is about George Floyd. But for many El Pasoans, there's a parallel with that and what we saw August the 3rd. I'd like to get your thoughts on that.
Do you see them both as cases of racism, although one obviously official police officers in their role?
No doubt. Racism is clearly at the heart of both incidents, except Minneapolis involved a police officer, and El Paso's August 3rd did not.
The suspect in the Walmart case, he was taken into custody peacefully. He was a young 21-year-old white man. He's in a jail cell. He'll have his day in court. And Mr. Floyd, over a alleged $20 fake bill, is dead.
That's another part of the tragedy of the Floyd situation, is the fact that he died over a simple misdemeanor forgery case. You don't take somebody's life over a simple incident like that. It's unnecessary. It was uncalled for. The incident on August 3rd, if he had had a gun in his hand and the police came upon him, quite frankly, they should have shot him. They would have been fully justified in taking his life. It's my understanding he was not armed at the time, and he held his hands up and surrendered. unfortunately, and I say this with a grain of salt, unfortunately, you had good cops there that recognized he was not armed, and they did the right thing according to policy and law. They didn't take his life, even though we all probably wish they would have. And it would have satisfied a lot of our bloodlust for revenge, and it would have saved a lot of time in the judicial system, and we wouldn't be having a lot of this discussion right now. He was not armed, so they did the right thing by not killing him. George Floyd didn't have a weapon, is my understanding. He didn't have a weapon. And even if he was resisting, you don't put somebody in a chokehold, a death hold, in order to bring him into compliance for a simple misdemeanor forgery case. You only put somebody in a potential death hold if it's a matter of life and death involving you or a third party. That is standard procedure taught at police academies all across this country. So what that police officer did, it was uncalled for. It was wrong.
Ron, again, drawing back to your experiences in El Paso, and you live in a multicultural community, largely Hispanic. But what are the lessons for the rest of the United States coming from El Paso? It's a community that's by large, one of the most peaceful communities in the country, tolerant. What should other Americans throughout the country learn from El Paso?
The first thing they should learn is that if they want good Mexican food, come here. It's got the best. El Paso is a good community. It is a peaceful community. It's a very welcoming community, always has been. It is the type of community that will open its arms and embrace you. I think we have a good mix in terms of our racial breakdown. Just by the very fact that we live on the border, it's going to be dominated by the Mexican community and culture. That's a given. That's understood. You learn to live with that breakdown. You learn to understand it, and you learn to adjust to the dominance of the Mexican culture here. It's a part of the character makeup of El Paso. One of the things I've always said, and I've never understood why, is the fact that with the dominance of the Mexican culture, why they don't dominate politically. You have this dominance, but yet you have a white dominance in terms of the overall political character of El Paso. And it's always been that way. To me, it's never made any sense. Why can't they learn to consolidate their political power and maintain control of the city in which they dominate? I've never understood it. It's one of the things that intrigues me nationally, too. With the dominance of Mexican Americans in this society of ours, if they were to put that dominance to the voting booth, they could do a lot of good things. They could do a lot of good things. And we don't see it here in El Paso, where it could really show effect. We don't see it nationally.
What gives you hope right now as you look ahead, or what would you like to see that would give you hope?
What gives me hope right now is I'm hopeful in terms of what I'm seeing on TV with these peaceful protests, these kids. The activity that they're displaying, protesting the killing, protesting the totalitarian nature of our government right now. Quite frankly, I'm loving the fact that in Washington, D.C. especially, they have forced Trump to back down from his threat to bring the military out and, quote unquote, dominate the streets. This is a young people powered movement, and I think it's only going to get stronger as time goes on.
You talk about the sense of despair about not enough Hispanics taking their rightful role as a majority. Does this coalition, what you're seeing on the streets, does that give you a sense of hope that maybe that can lead to bigger change?
Yes, it does. Yes, it does. Whenever you get a mixture of the races, a rainbow coalition like what we're seeing right now, it always gives hope. But what needs to happen is you can't have this mixture come together for a moment like this, and 6 weeks from now, it all fades away after the music stops. It has to be an ongoing effort. As I recall, the Black Lives Matter movement came into effect right around the time of Ferguson. And it's continuing. Quite frankly, it has continued because things keep happening, which keeps adding fuel to that fire. and allows them to keep growing. Their message keeps expanding. And right now, I think we're seeing that their message has a worldwide appeal. When we see signs that says Black Lives Movement in Rio de Janeiro and London and places like that, I think that's good. We have to hope and pray that this thing does not die down, that these kids keep it going. But it has to keep going with a purpose.
Ron Stallworth is a former police officer and detective. He's the author of the 2014 memoir, Black Klansmen, which was turned into a film in 2018 by Spike Lee. He spoke via Zoom with journalist Angela Cocherga, news director of KTEP in El Paso, and Alfredo Corchado, Mexico City bureau chief for the Dallas Morning News. Thanks for joining us this week on Fronteras. You can find the show online at tpr.org and wherever you get your podcasts. Fronteras is produced by Norma Martinez and Lauren Terrazas. Our executive producer is Dan Katz. Our digital content producer is Bree Kirkham. Our editor is Fernando Ortiz Jr. Ben Henry is our podcast producer. Charanga Cakewalk composed our theme music. Special thanks today to KTEP in El Paso. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio.